This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. 7:37 a.m. Thursday, the 30th of July. And in about half an hour, we're going to be having The Breakfast Grill, where I'll be speaking with Ian Buruma, author and former editor-in-chief of the New York Review of Books. Now, Ian Buruma is a well-respected writer and editor, and he joins us on The Breakfast Grill to talk about his time as an editor of one of the foremost intellectual publications in the U.S., in the New York Review of Books, as well as, given his work and interest in East Asian culture, we dive into his political observations of Asian politics and what his thoughts are on the future of publishing and its survival in the digital age.
Yes, but before The Breakfast Grill, let's talk about what's happening over in the U.S. This week, we got news that Moderna and Pfizer vaccines are both separately entering a more advanced phase of the process, which involves conducting a 30,000-person trial. But Moderna and Pfizer aren't the only ones that have gotten to this stage. The Oxford-AstraZeneca partnership has also entered a similarly advanced phase after reporting encouraging results from their earlier phase trials.
And the companies have been consistently insisting that they will be able to come up with a vaccine by this fall, but it's nearly August, so is that timeline still realistic? For a view on this, we're speaking this morning to Sam Fazeli, Senior Healthcare Analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence. Thank you so much for joining us, Sam. I think what's on everyone's mind is, who are the leading candidates for a vaccine at this point?
AstraZeneca, obviously. The vaccine that they licensed from Oxford University, the so-called Chadox vaccine, they started phase three about 2 months ahead of both Pfizer and Moderna. And it's a smaller trial. So they're doing 10,000 patients as opposed to 30,000 patients for each of Pfizer and Moderna. That suggests that it's possible that they'll report earlier. Well, we'll wait and see. Obviously, all of this excludes the active Chinese companies who have been progressing very rapidly, CanSino being one of them. And I know, obviously, Sinopharm and Sinovac are also progressing. Our visibility on those is a little bit less, but they certainly are close to or about to start later stage trials as well.
Is a vaccine by the end of the year possible?
Yes, it's possible that a vaccine shows effectiveness in reducing COVID-19 by the end of the year. The problem you'll have is you won't know whether that effectiveness lasts 1 year, 2 years, 6 months. It's just impossible until you let the time pass. So for having a vaccine that has shown at least near-term protection, time will tell what sort of reduction in what kind of disease you'll see. It's possible to have results like that by the end of the year. I mean, AstraZeneca could report September, October, even possibly earlier. Pfizer has mentioned September, even though they just started, which is, I just remind everyone, is just over a month away. So that would be incredible. One of the biggest risks for all of these trials is we know that there are relatively high percentage of people who have asymptomatic disease. So they get the virus, but they have no disease. So you need to do your trial long enough and have enough patients so that your randomization into your control arm, placebo arm, and vaccinated arm is enough to take account of that issue. Because if you think about it, an asymptomatic patient who's got the virus could look like someone who's been vaccinated, right? So you could, of course, look at the blood of the patients and see whether the vaccine is there and look for telltale signs of the vaccine. But in the first read, you need to have enough patients enrolled so that you could at least iron that little difference out and truly see the effect of the vaccine. Time will tell, but you need a lot of patients. And that's why I'm a little skeptical about the earlier read of these trials.
And what do we know about the price of these vaccines should they come to market soon?
Yes, we have a whole range of prices. So AstraZeneca has spoken about $4 a dose, which they've talked about is roughly at cost. So that kind of gives you what the manufacturing cost of these things are for at least AstraZeneca. Pfizer has done a deal with the U.S. government for 100 million doses at $1.95 billion. So that's $19.50 per dose. And they have said that for the other 500 million doses that the U.S. government could purchase going forward, that would be at the same price. Now, remember that you need two doses. So we're talking about something just shy of, well, $39 for a course. Sanofi and Glaxo have done a deal with the UK, 60 million doses. It didn't say what the contract was in terms of value. The rumor has been that it's about just over 600 million. So that makes it about $10 a dose. And then, of course, we have some news yesterday with regards to Moderna talking about $50 to $60 for a course, two doses. So there, they're talking $25 to $30 a dose. And the question is, why should they have a higher price if their vaccine isn't necessarily better and potentially worse than what we've seen with Pfizer?
So Sam, looking at treatment drugs now, I mean, hydroxychloroquine received a lot of hype early on, although now more evidence seems to be emerging against that. How much has what we know about treatment drugs changed over the last couple of months?
Yeah, so that's a very good question, especially because we had an announcement, negative announcement, unfortunately, from Roche, saying that their Actemra drug that they'd been testing in one phase 3 trial didn't meet its primary endpoint. Now, Actemra was one of the hopes. Sanofi and Regeneron also had a drug called Kevzara, which they had been testing, which works in a similar way to Actemra. That already failed. What has worked are some of the older drugs, which is good for the economics, because Actemra costs several thousand dollars, according to our estimates. What I think these other drugs, such as dexamethasone, which is an oldish generic drug costing a few dollars, probably shown one of the best evidence of treatment effect. And also you have the Gilead drug, which is being used, remdesivir, which has also shown a reduction in hospital stays. So you have two options there. And there's been also some changes in the medical care, such as something called pronation, putting people on their belly as opposed to on their back, seems to meaningfully impact the outcome of the severity of the disease. So I think the medical community has got a couple of products with which to fight the disease and also has got better at managing the patients.
What else is going on in the pharmaceutical industry that we should also be paying attention to?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. Obviously, the executive orders that came from the White House a few days over the weekend or on Friday, those are something that has started exercising the minds of pharma executives. There are some what I agree with the pharma industry, draconian measures that are being talked about, for example, the international pricing index, so that U.S. drug prices are priced at an average or the favored nation. So if somewhere in similar kind of economies, a product is $1 a dose and the U.S. is paying $2 a dose, that price should be $1 a dose. Now, this would be a major problem for pharma because some of their drugs, a lot of their drugs, are higher priced in the U.S. than they are elsewhere. Their argument also is that they spend a lot more R&D in the U.S. and drugs are often first approved in the U.S. So patients gain from this. It's a difficult argument to make, but I also think it's a very difficult thing to do to bring in an international pricing index.
Thank you for speaking with us this morning, Sam. That was Sam Fazeli of Bloomberg Intelligence giving us a bit of an update on the current vaccine candidates and the trials that are happening, particularly over in the US, though, as he pointed out, they don't have so much visibility on what's happening with the Chinese companies, although he is aware of several companies that have also entered into trials on that front.
Yeah, so what we know in the latest news, Britain has gone on a worldwide spending binge on potential COVID-19 vaccines, which with its latest deal bringing the number of vaccination shots, I think, on order to 250 million for a population of 65 million people.
Yeah, and then the overarching question is always going to be, how do you distribute the vaccine? Who gets it first? Is it about wallets? Is it about distributing to targeted areas which are affected? That's going to be a question that no one's going to be able to answer for the time being. But side note, while we're talking about big pharma, Kodak, you know, the company that used to make cameras and film, mm-hmm. They've entered the pharmaceutical industry, apparently. Kodak Pharmaceuticals, on the back of a loan, or on track to receive a 7 $765 million loan from the U.S. government to enter the pharmaceutical manufacturing business on the back of the COVID-19 pandemic. They're going to be producing generic drug ingredients, and this is part of the first of its kind under the Defense Production Act, that loan that they're receiving. The stock has, lean as I say, skyrocketed like 600%.
Very interesting business transformation plan there from Kodak. Now, of course, you know, Sam brought up the fact that trials, vaccine trials, also need to go on long enough to perhaps capture asymptomatic patients as well. So there's a little bit of concern over how fast these drugs are coming to market. But I guess we'll have to wait and see which one we start seeing being marketed first. But right now we have some messages for you. And then up next, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Hamidin Abdul Hamid of the Ilham Center about a potential state government change in Sabah. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.